came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So, Judy, we're looking forward to hearing what you have to say on that. Let's get you unmuted here. One moment.
There we go.
Okay.
I got it. All right. Good evening, everyone. Boy, it's good to see y'all. It's good to be here in a meeting of my sweet family of AA members. Oh, my goodness. Let's see, step two. Before I go into step two, I just want to remind everyone of one thing. And that is, eventually, every alcoholic will have their last drink. Those of us in Alcoholics Anonymous will get to talk about ours. I want you to all remember that. The purpose of the 12 steps is to get us to a safe recovery, being recovered from the insanity of alcoholism. And it takes some work, doesn't it? If you've been around a little while, you're kind of catching on to the idea that this is, in fact, not a thinking program, but an action program. And so step two, you know, before we even begin with step two, I just want to review step one, where we come to an understanding of three important concepts, and that is that we're not God. That's like one thing we have to learn. We are not God. We don't have the power. We come to determine and know and understand for sure that we can't fix ourselves. I tried. I couldn't do it. And then the third thing is, we're hearing everybody say, we're always going to be an alcoholic. So that means I'm never cured. I always have to be taking some kind of action to keep my disease at bay. And I have found that to be true in my years of being here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think when we're talking about new people and just beginning to work on the steps, I don't know about you all, but when I was new, I would sit in meetings and I was very uncomfortable and very unsure, and I had ongoing anxiety. And so I want to read this. It's something that I don't know if I told you, but when I had my first sponsor, she gave me important directions all the time. And one of the things was, she said, in order for you to be able to sit through a meeting and pay any attention at all with your crazy ass mind, I want you to write down one thing that you learn at every meeting. And she was a wise old bird, because that really brought my focus into trying to capture some kind of something during the meeting time, instead of just sitting there, not, you know, just having my mind go crazy. So I heard this at a meeting. I still take notes, so I'm not positive when I heard it, but I really like it. And I think it speaks directly to the new people, but it can also speak to anyone who's sitting there and maybe having some challenge that is creating some trouble and emotional or spiritual unrest with you. So even now, as broken as you may feel, you are still so strong. There's something to be said for how you hold yourself together and keep moving, even though you may feel like shattering. Don't stop. This is your healing. It doesn't have to be pretty, perfect, or graceful. You just have to keep going. So that's what we mean when we say keep coming back no matter what. Keep coming back no matter how you're feeling. Things will begin to settle down. It just takes time. Oh, I have so many things. Oh, my goodness. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, for me, I didn't come to believe right away. And my beloved third sponsor, Mary, who took me through the book, pointed out to me on page 47, if you have your book, you could follow along with me. The top of the page says, "When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book." And then it says, "Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what you may have against..." "Honestly asking yourself what they mean to you." So when I was listening to spiritual terms like character building, like honesty, like integrity, like courage, I knew that, first of all, I was never going to acquire those characteristics, and that you all had them, and they just weren't ever going to happen to me. So I had to stop, and I had to consider. My sponsor said, "There's either a power at work here, or there's not. There is a universal principle of creation, and it can be God or the universe or creator." Patty uses that a lot. "Or whatever you want to call it." Excuse me. "And it doesn't have to be any kind of perfect concept. It just has to be something that you're willing to consider. What do you believe in spirituality? What terms have any kind of meaning to you? And why do you want to persist in the erroneous thinking that you are not worth the possibility of character building, that would not be a gift to you?" And as you're trying to figure these things out, and I was about 3 years sober, not drinking, and only having worked step one, I was now at the point where I'm working step two. She said, "How is it, I wonder, that you've managed to not drink for all this time? What has been at work in your life so far? What have you considered, is this power greater than yourself?" And that power greater than myself, first of all, was the group of drunks in the meeting, G-O-D, and then good orderly direction, where I wrote down one thing I learned and then tried to implement those items into my life. And that was my conception of God. That's what I had to work with. And she said, "That would be fine. That's a pretty good concept." So it says on page 47, "At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understand Him. Afterwards, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach." It said, "That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was." And I don't know that I mentioned last week, some of you know because, you know, we've been friends and you've heard my story, but I'm a gal who early in my adolescence was sexually abused by a priest in the Catholic Church, and that went on for several years during my, you know, childhood. So I didn't want to hear about God, church, religion. I still don't, you know, I said last week I don't like the 24-hour book, that reading. It's too churchy, it's too religious for me. I'm not a person that reads the Bible. I can't quote those kind of things. I did like reading some of Thomas Merton's things. I like reading about spiritual concepts. I like reading about Buddhism. I like reading about a lot of things that would have me consider what it is I want to believe in. And that's what I did. I started seeking for answers that could work for me. And I listened to what all of you were saying, and everyone had a different little slant on what their belief was. But it all came down to the fact that they knew for sure they didn't have any power. So that power, that guiding force, that direction, that guidance had to come from some place out of themselves. Well, we found out later on, it doesn't come from someplace out of yourself. It actually comes from someplace within yourself. You just have to be quiet and listen. But that's later on with the steps. So this was a pretty exciting time in my sobriety, because I felt like I was getting to be part of really and truly the solution, rather than continuing to be part of the problem. Because I hadn't changed very much. Very much in my life hadn't changed. I just wasn't drinking. Hi there, little Jerome puppy. And it began, this was a threshold for me to leave everything that I thought I knew on the table and walk away from it and start to examine things that might be more beneficial and making more sense to me. And so that's just the beginning of how I began to conceptualize a power greater than myself. And the idea that I had been sober for that long, how could that happen without a power greater than myself working in my life? Because I knew without a doubt that I could not fix myself. I tried and tried and tried before I got here. That was an impossibility. I couldn't do it. I think, you know, I don't think we should be asking God to guide us and to show us what footsteps we should take next if we aren't really willing to put our shoes on and take the steps, huh? That's part of it. We don't ask for guidance and then listen and then sit there and think about it. You know, get up, put your shoes on, take a step and then take another step and do the best you can. And like I said earlier, it doesn't have to be perfect or graceful or even pretty. Just get moving. So along with the idea that there's a power greater than myself, my sponsor wanted me to consider that perhaps this power had a plan for me and that I would be guided on the road to achieve this plan. And that it wasn't my plan, whatever I thought I wanted, which was next to nothing because I didn't think I deserved anything. She encouraged me to open my mind and to consider that some really miraculous things were going to happen in my life. And I'm sitting here and I can't even explain to you the things that have happened in my life that I could never, never have dreamed of. I went to meetings and I don't know, I started to change. I started to be able to do things differently. I started to think about the insane behaviors that I had, not just the insanity that I knew of for sure was always thinking this time would be different. Always thinking that I was going to be able to manage it. I was going to be able to control it. I would eat before I drank. I would drink something different. I wouldn't hang out with the same people. That was one kind of insanity. But you know, we take away the drink, and I'm here to tell you, in my case, the insanity was there. My mind would not stop racing. It was filled with negativity. I was an emotional wreck. I was spiritually bankrupt, and I had a hole so deep in my soul that I just don't even know how I managed to put one foot in front of the other. And I came to meetings, and I felt safe. And I heard what you were doing, and little by little, I just tried to practice the actions and the words that you guys were doing. And it was, you know, for me, it was a slow process. And it is because I had the willingness, and I could let go of my old ideas, all of the things that were erroneous, and they were, but I didn't know it, and begin to listen to you and consider, is there truth in that or not? Now, I have to say, you guys haven't lied to me since I've been here. Well, sometimes we run into a person who says, I'm not drinking, and we know they are because they reek of alcohol. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if I'm asking for help, if I am asking you for guidance, if I'm asking you for clarity, you are honest, forthright, non-judgmental, tolerant, and loving. And you have been that way since day one. And for that, I'm forever grateful. There's no other place I could have come, landed as sick as I was, and had the opportunity to become whole and to begin to think to myself, perhaps there's a purpose, imagine that, to my life. Now, everybody, when I was new, did their very best to help me. They went out of their way. I could just go on and on. The old timers, I was so blessed to have them in my life. They made sure I attended meetings. They stayed on me. They encouraged me to pick up other people. They gave me opportunity to be chairperson. I was secretary at Tri-County Arid Club. I was secretary of the Friday night meeting. I was a treasurer at a meeting. And at one of the meetings, I think it was Friday night, Tri-County Arid Group, they asked me if I would be interested in making a couple dollars and bake for the meeting. And because, you know, we just had donuts, all the meetings had donuts, and they had, I went to all the events in Alcoholics Anonymous. If there was a picnic or a potluck or a fundraiser or an anniversary or anything like that, I was on it, and I baked something or brought a covered dish. And it was a great way to feed my family by showing up at those with a nice contribution. And not only that, it just was a great way to spend an evening. And the kids really enjoyed going to those things. Oh, I don't know how you guys put up with my children, but you did. And so the people that asked me if I would bake for the meeting kind of already knew I loved to bake. And so I told them I would, thank you for asking me, but I really didn't have the money to invest in the ingredients to bake. And they said, don't worry, we'll reimburse you for the ingredients. So I said, oh, I'll be glad to bake then. So I got busy, and once a month I had pie night, and that would involve like at least 12 pies that I would make for that meeting. It was fun. Baking pies is my specialty. So I made things like Boston cream pie, if you guys know what that is. I made gingerbread with hot lemon sauce. I made chocolate molten cakes. I made, I made peach cobbler. I made blackberry cobbler. I made homemade cream puffs, homemade eclairs. I could go on and on. So word got out, and we had more people at Friday night meeting than we could stand. A couple other meetings asked me if I would bake for them. And that was the first time in a very long time that I felt like I was making a contribution that was beneficial to someone. So you gave me a purpose. You gave me an opportunity to contribute in some positive way. And I am forever grateful, because I just got accolades and you just built me up, and it just was a wondrous thing. I sponsored a little girl when I was about 4 or 5 years sober, and she wanted to go. She was financially distraught. She was in a terrible situation and looking to divorce her husband, and she wanted to go to Punderson. And so I said, well, you have to start saving your money. A couple dollars a week is going to get your registration, and, you know, we'll provide the transportation. I think it can happen. And she said, I can't save a couple dollars a week. And I said, listen, you need to think of something you can do to make a couple of dollars. Now, come on, God gave you talent and skills. Let's get going. And this little girl, I knew that she, when we had covered dish night or potluck dinners, this little gal brought the dinner rolls, and she would make them in a pan, you know, about 6 or 8 to a pan, and they were homemade yeast bread dinner rolls, and they were to die for. And I heard people at the meeting say, oh my God, you should make these and sell them. But she never did. She thought, you know, she'd had no worth. So I told her my story about baking pies, you know, a year or two earlier, and how that worked out for me. And I made a little bit of money doing it. And I suggested she do that. And I was working in the hospital, and she couldn't make them fast enough. So she not only made enough money to go to Punderson, she made enough money to go to Punderson, pay her rent, her hotel room there in the manor house, buy a new outfit, have money to spend while she was there. So, you know, I don't do for others what they can do for themselves, huh? So see how just your recommendation, your invitation to ask me to be of some kind of service turns into a means where I can help another become useful and have purpose. And she was blown away by the reaction. And this gal, when she returned from Punderson, her husband, who she was divorcing, was really angry and upset. And he said, you know, you have to pay me for the electric and for use of the gas, you know, for mixing and baking all those bread rolls. So she called me up. I know you're laughing. Isn't that funny? And she called me up and she said, do you believe that? And I said, just pay him. Just give him the money. You know, it's part of the expense. Give it to him. So she did, and then she went and, of course, divorced him. So I like telling these stories. You know, my early times in AA were so miraculous. These were things that were like, how can this happen? How can this be? We had so much fun. And I wouldn't have stayed if I hadn't had these kind of activities and events happening. And I'm sitting here telling you, This continues to this day. I have the craziest, most spontaneous, fun, wonderful, crazy life that you could ever imagine. It just is so wonderful. And of course, like so many have said previously to me, the biggest joy is in helping another be able to achieve the satisfaction of this new way of life. You know, when step two says, came to believe that a power would restore us or could restore us to sanity, you know, what does that mean to be restored? You know, have you thought about that? Let's just take a minute and think. What in the world does that mean? I had this, just hang on here a second. It is the art, action, or process of returning to a normal state. Now, when I was drinking, I was not in a normal state. And when I quit drinking, I still wasn't in a normal state. I was in a more normal state than if I was drinking, but I wasn't normal yet. I was still nutso. I was emotionally crazy and spiritually bankrupt. So a normal state, we have to look at what normal people do. We are not normal. I got news for you. Far from it. We're nutso. We're a whack job. We need a lot of help. So all of the people in the rooms helped me to return to a normal state where I didn't have to do the crazy-ass things I was doing. How about this one? The restoration of something lost or forgotten. The restoration of a connection with a power greater than myself. I know before the events in the Catholic Church, I had an understanding. I had a deep desire to get to know God, to maybe begin to understand about it. So I got to have that restored. How about this one? The resumption of belief in oneself. I didn't have that when I got here. I honestly didn't think I would be able to stay sober for a day. But here I am, 42 years later. I'm still sober. Whoever would have thought of that? The chance to resurrect something that was thought forever broken. I thought my heart and my soul were never going to be able to be repaired. I was so distraught. I was so empty. I couldn't imagine ever getting that whole fixed. But it happened. And then how about this? A homecoming. Doesn't that sound wonderful? A homecoming. And then, of course, it's a difficult ongoing struggle, isn't it? Because we have to continue no matter what, even if we feel so broken, as I read in the beginning. Just keep coming. And how about this? A most worthy endeavor. That's what it means to be restored. That's what it means to me. That's what I took from working with my sponsor. I don't know. So basically, my friends, that's what I have to say to you on step two. That is my experience and some of the highlights of my early sobriety. And thank God I am far away from that kind of insanity. And each and every day, honestly, I really, really thank you for my sobriety. It is because of you that I can be here and be me. God bless you.
Thank you, Judy. So now we'd like to open things up to some questions and answers. So if you're here in the room and you have a question, go ahead and raise your hand. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, just go ahead and unmute yourself and you can ask your question at that point. So who would like to get us started?
Hi, Judy. Thank you for sharing. My name is Donnie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Donnie.
Now, this process of restoration that you're talking about, is this something that you continue to do on a daily basis, or was this just when you did the second step?
No, I think you know, all of the steps, my dear, are kind of an ongoing process. I think we're always trying to improve. I have a lot of things that still can be tweaked and improved, and you know, I just keep striving to become a little bit better every day. Thank you.
Who else has a question?
I'm Patty Elkhart.
Hi, Patty.
Sister, was there a moment, an experience that happened in your early recovery or whenever to really believe in that higher power?
Thanks for that question, Patty. I don't know why, but I didn't talk about that. When I was about a year and a half, 2 years sober, I'd had a week of every kind of challenge you could think of. Just a really lot of crazy things happened in my family and in my life. And I went to the Night and Day Club just upset. I felt like I was going to drink. I was nutsy. I hadn't met Mary yet. I knew Helen was leaving. That was my sponsor at the time. And there was a gentleman there that I knew very well from going there for the previous 2 years. His name, we called him Whitey. And I think they called him that because he had white hair. He was an old timer, and at least in my estimation, he was an old timer. He's still around, as far as I know. I saw him this past spring over in a Madison meeting, and I went and saw him, and I said, "I'm dying. I don't know what to do." And I told him my dilemma, all the things I needed help with. And he said, Judy, I want you to go home after this meeting, and I want you to find a quiet place. The kids aren't home from school. I want you to get on your knees and ask God for help. I want you to pray. And I said, oh, my God. I said, how long do I have to do that? And he said, until you feel better. So, if you heard me last week, one of the four things I had to do was follow directions in order to have that promise of not having to drink come true. And so I was a person who followed directions. So I went home and I got on my knees in my bedroom and I closed the door. And I was on my knees for about 2.5 hours. And a sense of peace, a sense of knowing that everything was going to be all right came over me. And I had a knowing. I don't know how else to describe it. I didn't have to drink. I knew everything was going to be okay. I had no clue how it was going to be okay. I just had a belief that I didn't have before I started asking for help, that it was going to be okay. And I believe, you know, that was one spiritual experience that I had. So yes, Patty, I did have a knowing that was a beginning for me. Thank you for asking.
Who else has a question for Judy? Anybody on Zoom? Oh, Kevin's got his hand up.
There you go.
Got it.
Hi, Judy. Thanks for showing up again. I really appreciate it. Maybe next week we'll get a chance to get you here in person. That would be really nice, too. My question to you is, you know, you described yourself when you first came into the program as this crazy-ass wild person. When did you, like, look in the mirror and go, hey, I'm not that crazy-ass wild person. I'm actually getting this.
Thanks for the question, Kevin. Actually, I didn't look in the mirror because I didn't like what I saw. What happened was older women, old-timers in the program said to me, they would take me aside and say, you need to stop acting like such a goofball. They would say, you need to quit dressing like that. There's men in this in these meetings. Cover up. Lengthen your skirts. What the hell do you think is going on here? You need to stop hanging around with the married men. So it wasn't looking in the mirror. It was sort of looking in the mirror through their eyes, but it wasn't me looking in the mirror. And what happened was, you know, I became enraged and very angry, and then I had to sit quietly with my feelings, and the honesty seeped in. And, you know, my truth became vividly clear to me in that you're not behaving in the way the other ladies are. You're still behaving very much the same as you did when you were out there drinking. And if you keep doing what you always did, you're going to continue to get what you always got. That was something I heard a lot in meetings. And so it finally just dawned on me I had to start making changes. Now, my sponsor started helping me make changes by cleaning up my language. She said, oh boy, I hated this, but she was right on. She said, there's lots of ways to express yourself without using your street language. She said, people that swear and use street language only demonstrate how illiterate they are. I didn't want to be illiterate. I didn't like that. And, you know, they were very clear and concise. They didn't mince their words. They were directly, stated to me. And so I had no choice but to consider what they were saying. Is it true? Is it not? It is true. And so I use that on girls that I sponsor. I use a lot of things that they used on me. I use it on girls that I sponsor. And she said, you know, if you don't know any words to use instead of the swear words in the street language, you know, we can sit and go through the dictionary together, and I help you find some new words. And she had me looking in the dictionary and picking out a new word and then using it in a sentence. And oh my God, she just had me doing all kinds of shit. But I did it because, you know, how else was I going to learn? And I said I would follow directions, and so I did. And so I got to expand my vocabulary, and, you know, I still do that. Do you guys know what egg money is? This is a new concept I learned over the weekend. Anybody know what egg money is?
Nope.
Oh, my God. He'll never believe it. This crazy guy that I'm dating, his name is Tom, and he on the way home from Florida, he said, hey, you know, I bet you never heard of egg money. And I said, no, I haven't. I said, you know, where do you come up with this crazy shit? And, here I am swearing, see, and I just got done saying I was going to. But, see, who asked me, are you still working on it? Yes, I am. So it's a female who works on a farm, and she sells eggs and butter, and the money she makes from that is stashed away to be spent on something fun. That's called egg money. And so in my soul posse, these crazy women that helped me stay on the straight and narrow, I asked them that question, and one of the girls actually knew what it was. So she won the prize. She's going to get a dozen eggs and a pound of butter. We're going to have a quiz once a month on, you know, a new concept to learn. So we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun, us girls. So, yeah, there you have it, egg money. Now, see, I've imparted some new knowledge for y'all. There you go. Don't you love this way of life?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Anybody else have a question for Judy? Anybody on Zoom? If not, we want to thank you, Judy.
Thank you.